That chair's not really meant for two people, but it's sure warm this morning. I love my sons. During my time away from you for the last couple weeks, we were limited to a couple of news networks in terms of news coverage. And as I watched that periodically through those weeks, I really noticed how the political climate of the country is getting hotter and hotter every day. As the Iowa caucuses approach, and I have been a part of that when we lived in Iowa, we realize that more and more attention is being directed by the media to the campaign rhetoric. One of the interesting things that I've noticed about the coverage is the almost instant rating of the candidate's truthfulness. Now this seems to vary significantly from network to network, depending on their political leanings. So it got me to thinking about that word, truth. What is truth? It's a question that Pilate asked Jesus about 2,000 years ago. And it is a question still being asked today. Now, I have to admit that the 2 weeks I've been gone, I have not been up late at night worried about the answer to that question, what is truth? Doesn't keep me awake at night. And yet, truth is the basis of our lives. It shapes our beliefs, it shapes our assumptions, and it directs our actions. What is truth is a significant question for us to ask, since it's truth that guides our living as Christians. Now, the search for truth is one of the biggest issues facing the church today. I believe that it has been our inability to articulate and explain truth to past generations that has hurt the credibility of the Christian church. A study regarding baby boomers, many of us in this room, those of us born in the late 40s, 50s, and 60s, talk about my generation's absence in the mainline Protestant churches. The people surveyed were confused as to where they could find truth and credible religious authority. In other words, relativism was one of the biggest reasons why many of the baby boomers have left the church. Now, the search for truth is a crucial one for the Christian church and those of us who are a part of it. Talking about truth is frightening because we live in a world where there is such a plurality of truth, with perhaps the biggest concern being, how do we live with these different ways of looking at truth without killing each other? Pilate himself, he lived in a world of plurality. There was a diversity of Jews who lived in Palestine during Pilate's time, including the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Essenes, and all of them claimed to have the truth. And then along comes this young Nazarene named Jesus, who claimed to be the truth. It was a delicate thing for Pilate to try to survive in a world with such plurality. And so Pilate tried to get Jesus into a philosophical discussion with his question, what is truth? When Jesus refused to enter into the discussion, he ended up being killed. Unfortunately, we still have the same difficulty trying to deal with the pluralities of truth that are surrounding us. It's easy to become confused because we can't distinguish what really is truth. We find ourselves muddling around from one truth to another, trying to figure out what works best in our life. The problem in our quest for truth becomes even more difficult because we realize that religions other than Christianity have their own truth claims and their own authority. Yet we know that the quest for truth is one of the most important elements in our search for ultimate purpose and meaning in our lives. My focus this morning for us as Christians is to look again at the significance of this quest for truth and some of the obstacles that hinder us. There is a New England college president who tells a story of a young woman who had confessed to cheating on an exam. She came to his office to say that she didn't think she should be suspended because she had not meant any harm. The college president said, "There's not a lot I can do about it. The institution has certain standards, and I would have thought that you did too." The young woman replied, "I'm sure I do have standards. I just don't know what they are." Now, that young woman might not have known it, but she spoke for an entire society. Many claim to have high moral and ethical standards, but we don't always know what they are. The search for truth is difficult because social trends seduce us and pull us in when it comes to moral and ethical issues. These days, feelings and emotions seem to be the determining factor when it comes to many decisions. In other words, if it feels all right and doesn't cause harm to others, then it becomes acceptable and truth for us. Needless to say, feelings can be fickle, and we know that our emotions can be unpredictable, not always reliable. Perhaps worst of all, though, is that if we allow our feelings to be our moral and ethical indicators, we travel the road towards relativism, where truth has no substance or meaning, ultimately. What feels like truth in one given situation may be a myth in another, or what may feel like truth for one person may feel like an untruth for another. To the extent that we follow the fads of our time, every prevailing trend becomes the benchmark of our decision. Truth becomes anything that feels good and comfortable and doesn't cause harm. Our emotions are relative to other things around us. All we do is become open to every and all avenue, where everything is up for grabs. When all truths are to be accepted, then there is no truth. Although I don't want to be totally down on our feelings, we have placed emotions, I think, way too high when it comes to decision-making and ethical choices. The second trend that I believe is even more prevalent in our world, including the church, is the supremacy of the individual. And maybe we Congregationalists are the worst of this. In our time, the welfare of the individual has become one of the most important norms of our time. In fact, in some ways, the individual has almost become a god. One of my former professors, Elizabeth Ackermeyer of Union Seminary in New York, writes about this concern. This is what she says. "The individual's feelings must always be honored. The individual's religious experience must be the judge of all. The individual's views must never be challenged or judged to be wrong." In other words, society encourages us to elevate individuality above our beliefs and values. Individuality is something that we don't want destroyed. We elevate individualism because it's a way of dealing with the plurality out in the world. But there are some real problems with this high view of individualism. If this was how Jesus viewed the truth, he would have probably told his followers, "Now these teachings, folks, are merely suggestions. I suggest you live the way you want." He would have never confronted the religious and the political establishment of his time. His message was one that divided and challenged others sometimes. Think about it. The Apostle Paul would never have written the letters that he did, which helped clarify things like the meaning of grace and hope and love. Great leaders of the Reformation like Martin Luther and John Calvin would never have said no to the corruption in the church of their time. Martin Luther King Jr. would never have challenged the racial inequality of this nation. If individualism had been such a high standard, people throughout history who suffered mocking and martyrdom would never have done so. And you and I would not be in church today claiming the name of Christian. What we need as Christians today is to be not so afraid to talk about the word truth. For you see, the world is looking for a sane and clear, convicted, and visionary voice. And the world ought to be able to find that in the church. And if we as Christians and as a church have something to say about society, about the human conditions of injustice and ignorance and bigotry and hunger and war and sin, unless we start to speak out against these things, we as a church will fail. We have to be clear about the truth that we have come to know in Jesus Christ. And we have to share that truth with the world. Amen.